Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. One of the most hotly debated state questions on the November ballot in Oklahoma will be the Oklahoma Right to Farm Amendment, State Question 777, which would require the courts to rule on any law regulating farming, ranching, or agriculture passed after the end of 2014. And if the amendment passes, it would force courts to overturn those laws unless they are seen to be protecting a, quote, compelling state interest, unquote, which in practice would give farming and ranching interests extra constitutional protections against regulation. Now, supporters say this question would allow farmers to defend themselves against unjust laws, make the state more attractive to farmers, and allow consumers to decide best farming practices through free market competition. Opponents say it would be used to prevent state and local governments from providing reasonable regulations regarding food and water quality, environmental protections, and animal cruelty. They also claim the amendment would give large corporate farms an advantage over small local farms. As might be expected, there are multiple opponents and proponents lining up around 777. Today we'll hear from a representative of each. We begin with the chair of the Oklahoma Stewardship Council, former Oklahoma Attorney General Drew Edmondson, who is against 777. Drew Edmondson, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
As chair of the Oklahoma Stewardship Council, your group is in opposition to State Question 777. What led to your opposition? What is it about this particular state question that you object to?
Well, some of your listeners may recall that while I was Attorney General, I was pretty active in efforts to protect the waters of eastern Oklahoma from agricultural runoff. We also fought battles in northwestern Oklahoma over hog farms and sewage lagoon spills and spreading hog waste on the land. So I'm very sensitive to risks to our water, as is the city of Tulsa. It had to go to court to protect Uji and Spavinaw. So when something comes along that says in the future we're not going to be able to regulate agricultural production or techniques or technology, which would include application of waste, except under the old regs as of December 31st, 2014, but nothing new, I am concerned that we would not be able to react to a danger to our water. So that was my primary concern in getting involved in this fight.
Now, of course, a lot of people have talked about the vagueness of State Question 777, that the fact that it says legislature shall pass no laws that abridge the rights of citizens and lawful residents of Oklahoma to employ agricultural technology.
Undefined.
Livestock production.
Undefined.
And ranching practices.
Also undefined.
Yeah, without a compelling state interest. And the compelling state interest is?
Now, compelling state interest is not defined in 777, but it is a term of art in the law. We know what compelling state interest means. It is the standard that's applied when government attempts to interfere with fundamental rights that are subject to strict scrutiny. Here we're talking about your right to go to the church of your choice, your freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of you to announce the news as you see fit here at this station. Your right to vote is a fundamental right protected by strict scrutiny. And if government attempts to interfere in that, they must show a compelling state interest. So this is the highest burden that you can put on any statute, any municipal ordinance, or any administrative regulation. It also flips the burden of proof. If something is subject to strict scrutiny and compelling state interest, the burden is on the governmental entity to prove that it's not unconstitutional, instead of the burden on a challenger to prove that it is.
So in criminal court, it's proving guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. And in this case, it would be proving that a practice is detrimental to the citizens of Oklahoma beyond a person's opinion. It has to be almost to a reasonable doubt issue.
The burden of proof, that's a good analogy, because it's the highest burden in civil law compared to beyond a reasonable doubt in criminal law. The only difference is if it were applied in criminal law, the burden would be on the defendant to prove his innocence beyond a reasonable doubt, just as the burden would be on the government to prove constitutionality beyond a reasonable doubt. It is not a good thing. And let me give you an example. Several years ago, 2008, we passed a constitutional right to hunt and fish in Oklahoma. But that language in that provision said, subject to reasonable regulation by the Oklahoma legislature and the Department of Wildlife Conservation. So it's the reasonableness that we're doing away with in 777, because there can be any number of regulations that are reasonable, maybe even important, that don't meet the standard of compelling state interest.
And who decides that? What is a compelling state interest? Does it become the judge that sees the case?
It'll be the courts, the first judge, the first district judge, and then subject to appeal to the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court of the state. And over the years, I guess we'll hammer out a body of law saying what is a compelling state interest and what isn't. What we do know is, because Michael Kelsey, the Cattlemen's Association, admitted to it at a forum over, I think it was in Weatherford just recently, when the legislature passed a bill in 2016 saying that water is a compelling state interest, the Cattlemen's Association now admits that if that butts heads with 777, it's unconstitutional because it wasn't put on the books before 2014. It wasn't put on the books until 2016. So he admits that they made a mistake in setting that date. And, it's a problem, and it's going to be a problem down the road.
And the idea that water is a compelling state interest, if there is a dispute under this, if it's passed, it goes to, the district court judge to decide if it is, water is indeed a compelling interest in that particular case, right?
That is correct, absolutely correct. And it's not whether or not we have water. If you don't have water, you're going to die. So, the existence of water is, of course, a compelling state interest. The case is going to be there's this new insecticide, and it has this chemical, and it's getting into the water, and we want to restrict the application of that chemical. Is that a compelling state interest? And that is a proof question where, the city of Tulsa or the city of Muskogee or Oklahoma City would be put to the test. And the fact that scientists are saying this may be harmful, it may impact children's health, may is not going to be good enough. They're going to have to prove that it has and that it does and that it endangers life.
So that means scientific studies to the point of refuting any possibility of
millions,
possible.
Millions of dollars to defend a statute that ecologists, scientists are saying this is potentially dangerous and we won't be able to do anything about it. Compelling state interest was at issue when the administration in Washington tried to stop the publication of the Pentagon Papers during the Vietnam War. They were saying, this reveals secrets about the military. It's potentially damaging with our allies. It could have all kinds of problems. And the Supreme Court unanimously said, we're not going to prevent the publication of the Pentagon Papers. It is an extremely high burden.
Now, given your work on water quality and how you went about trying to clean up the Illinois River watershed, would the passage of State Question 777 make it more difficult for, say, the Attorney General's office to take the lead in litigation as opposed to the legislature? Because it does address the legislature. It doesn't address the administrative and sort of the regulatory bodies of the state, does it?
It doesn't say that it does, but it establishes a fundamental right. It'd be like saying we have freedom of press under our Constitution, but a city is at liberty to violate it or an administrative agency is at liberty to violate it. It doesn't work that way. If it's a fundamental right, nobody can violate it. So it's just as restrictive on municipal ordinances as it is state law or administrative rules.
Well, and the thing you pointed to was the right of hunting and fishing. It was, again, reasonable regulation from the Department of Wildlife. Since that is not admitted there, then your Department of Environmental Quality, do they have any jurisdiction? Does the Attorney General's office have any jurisdiction in bringing cases?
They would have the jurisdiction that was on the books as of December 31st, 2014, assuming that a future legislature doesn't repeal, modify, or weaken that legislation. What they would not have is the ability to do something new. Now, agriculture and livestock production is free to evolve. They can come up with new chemicals, new pesticides, new herbicides, new genetic modifications, but the state, the body politic, as well as the city, is not free to pass new regulations, new restrictions based on those new procedures. We're frozen in time. Agriculture isn't. So this was be a boon to the big industrial farms. It's not going to help family farms a bit. The number of family farms have been declining in Oklahoma over the last several decades due to competition from the large industrial farms, and that would be accelerated under 777. We'd see more family farms disappearing.
How would 777 help large agribusiness, I guess, purchase of land and or leasing of land? And I know foreign interests is also a big concern.
Smithfield Farms, which is the largest hog producer in Beaver, Harper, and Ellis counties, is owned by the Chinese. You know, there are over 300,000 acres in Oklahoma that's already in foreign ownership. What this would do would be to free up what is allowed to be done on that land. It wouldn't make it any easier or harder to acquire the land, but it would free up what they can do on that land, which to my way of thinking is why in the state of Missouri, when they passed it in 2014, the number of applications for concentrated animal feeding operations, CAFOs, has skyrocketed because they see an opportunity to go virtually regulation-free, and that's what they would see in Oklahoma.
Let me ask you about confined animal operations. What I think most people would fear would be large industrial with multiple chicken hangers, if you will, chicken feed operators where we have multiple coverings for the chickens and large numbers of chickens. Would this have much of an effect on the small operator, that the farmer that farms a little bit of land, growing a couple crops, and he has also chickens as a sort of a extra way to earn a livelihood? Non-passage of this, will it affect them in any way?
Well, let me say off the bat, in my view, there's nothing inherently wrong with large animal feeding operations.
Okay.
I think we've gotten to the point where that's necessary to feed the country and feed the world. There are inherent problems with what you do with the waste that's generated from those operations, and that's where, you know, I've butted heads with the Tysons and the Seaboards of the world when I was Attorney General, because the waste application practices by those operators has been less than prudent and has been obviously dangerous to our environment. What's going to happen to the small farmer? They're going to continue to go out of business because they simply can't compete. And that's just what's going to happen in the marketplace. It may be accelerated by 777 because there's more of a license for the large operators to expand. But nothing in 777 is going to protect them from the big operators.
Proponents of State Question 777 say that there have been numerous regulatory and legalistic attempts to sort of hurt their industry. Can you tell me some of the things that they're saying has hurt the industry? And would it be reasonable for a vast majority of Oklahomans who are not involved in agriculture to see this as actually a harm?
I get a little tickled when I hear that because I've been in a number of forums with representatives of the Farm Bureau or the Cattlemen's Association, and the author, Scott Biggs, representative who introduced this bill, and I've repeatedly asked, okay, you know, you're talking to me about what happened out in California. What's happened in Oklahoma? You know, what has the legislature done in Oklahoma that puts you in fear? What has any city in Oklahoma done that makes you think farming and ranching is in jeopardy? What has the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Environmental Quality in Oklahoma done to make you concerned? And the answer repeatedly has been nothing. Nothing has happened in Oklahoma.
Or nothing yet.
Nothing yet. And that's, you know, Representative Biggs said, well, you'd be surprised how many crazy bills are introduced in the legislature that would have a detrimental impact on agriculture. Well, none of them have seen the light of day. If he had a constitutional amendment that said legislators couldn't introduce crazy bills, you know, I might vote for that. But the fact is, you know, when they're asked that question, they point east and west, East Coast and California, and say they've done crazy things out there. And some members in Oklahoma of the legislature have introduced crazy bills, but they can't point to anything that's been enacted. 777 was referred to a vote by an overwhelming vote in the House and the Senate. Our legislature has been protective of agriculture since 1907. They get special tax breaks, special license plate breaks, anything we can do to help agriculture. We have Agriculture Day at the Capitol. We have bent over backwards to be good to farming and ranching in Oklahoma. This is a solution in search of a problem. There is no problem. But there are inherent problems within the language of 777 that could rain down on us in future years. You don't have to change the regulations. All they have to do is repeal that sentence.
So we're about out of time now. So if you can sort of restate why voters should vote no on State Question 777.
Well, primarily it's a solution in search of a problem. There's nothing that's happened in the state of Oklahoma to suggest that agriculture and farming are in any way jeopardized. And second, it has long-reaching and far-reaching ramifications for the protection of our waters and the health and safety of our citizens. That's why on the pro side, you're going to see a list of agricultural organizations, starting with the Farm Bureau and the Cattlemen's Association and the Pork Council. On the other side, suggesting that a no vote is in order, you've got the Oklahoma Municipal League, the League of Women Voters, the Oklahoma Conference of Churches. Of course, you have environmental groups and you have animal protection groups, but you also have the Intertribal Council of the Five Civilized Tribes, and you have the cities of Oklahoma City and Edmond and the Village and Choctaw, and other cities are lining up to do the same thing. People who are not environmental enthusiasts or terribly concerned about protection of animals, but see a bad law and recognize it when they see it. And these people have come out against 777 because it's bad news for the future of Oklahoma.
Former Oklahoma Attorney General Drew Edmondson, who is chair of the Oklahoma Stewardship Council, talking about his opposition to State Question 777. Now we hear from a proponent of the amendment. As you might expect, a lot of interest groups representing farmer, agricultural, and ranching groups are supportive of this amendment. And we hear from the representative of one, the executive vice president of the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association, Michael Kelsey, joins us from the Tulsa State Fairgrounds. Michael Kelsey, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
You bet. Thank you.
As we look at State Question 777, a lot of people who are wondering about the question wonder, what is the impetus for State Question 777? The legislature has traditionally been very deferential to farming and ranching interests. Why the need for this amendment to the Constitution that guarantees the right to farm?
That's a great question. I really appreciate you asking. This is, from a ranching and a farming perspective, one of the most important things that we do is to make sure that our business, our livelihood, our farm and ranch will be there for our posterity, our kids and our grandkids. One of the threats we're seeing is these special interest groups who are coming in saying, we want to dictate how food is produced based on emotion rather than on science. And so we want to put this in the Constitution so that our kids and our grandkids will have the opportunity to farm and ranch and do it sustainably, do it economically, do it efficiently, and do it productively so that Oklahomans and even the world, because Oklahoma is part of feeding the world, can continue to feed the world with safe, affordable, wholesome food.
Now, the special interests you refer to, what are those special interests?
Yeah, for us, it's the animal rights groups, and specifically a couple of Washington, D.C.-based groups. One that's come into this election is the Humane Society of the United States, which is not the local humane societies. The local humane societies in cities and towns, they do a great job. This group, HSUS, is a Washington, D.C.-based animal rights group, and they have things like, they have a platform they call the 3 R's, which they encourage consumers to refine what they eat, reduce how much meat they eat, and then finally just replace all meat with plant protein. And they advocate for that, and they do so by going into other states and trying to influence legislation that makes meat more expensive to produce, more difficult to produce, and thus higher costs to consumers. That's what we're concerned about in the long run. If a consumer wants to make a choice for what they eat, we support that. But we'd rather the consumer choose that rather than government mandate or have a law that's influenced by a special interest group like an animal rights group.
Well, wouldn't they be more oriented towards like your large-scale confined animal operations, that sort of thing?
What do you mean by more oriented towards?
Well, would their opposition be towards confined animal operations?
Well, you would think that. However, what we've seen in the past is that these animal rights groups will say that, but if you really dig down deep, they want a vegan lifestyle. They want folks to not eat meat. Some of the most extreme HSUS and PETA have said that meat is bad for you, meat is murder, all these types of things. They've picketed 4-H and FFA shows, even here at the Tulsa State Fair in the past. You know, just in the extreme agendas that they have to just completely remove meat off the table. And we just don't think that's appropriate. We want consumers to choose. And so that's what this amendment does is it makes sure that consumers are in the driving seat so they can vote, if you will, with their dollar when they go to the grocery store rather than have things pulled off the shelf influenced by special interest groups.
If I can get back to that original question, though, but the legislature has been traditionally very deferential to the farming and ranching interests. In fact, many of the members of the legislature are farmers and ranchers. Can you point to any legislative action that has resulted in detrimental effects to Oklahoma's farmers and ranchers?
Oh, that's a great question. And I think you have to answer it, and you have to think about it in two ways. While if you look at it from today's standpoint, we do see occasionally that the animal rights agenda will propose some legislative ideas. For instance, the Kirkpatrick Foundation has sent a big book, if you will, to every legislator suggesting legislative changes that they should institute, such as that influence animal farming practices, such as pain mitigation. Some of those types of things. Even they suggest that laws be put into place to have air-conditioned trailers so that when we transport our animals, all trailers are air-conditioned. So we see that today. However, we look at it, too, from a 30, 40, 50 years from now, when our grandkids are there, the legislature continues to be removed from agriculture because of redistricting every 10 years and so forth. And so we just want to make sure that the legislature, and the legislature agreed with us, that they have a standard by which they apply rules and regulations, and that is the compelling interest. It's in the health, the safety, and the well-being of the citizens of Oklahoma, then the legislature should have the authority. If it's not, if it's an opinion or a special interest group type agenda, then that's not appropriate for the legislature to look at. It's appropriate for consumers to make those decisions.
But as far as actually something getting through the legislature, even seeing major votes on that, that doesn't really happen on farming and ranching issues. And I think you'd have to say that there are a lot of bad bills that are introduced, but most of them go nowhere. Has there been anything that has been introduced and seriously debated in the legislature that would cause concern for farmers and ranchers?
You're right. There are a lot of bad things that are introduced, and they don't go anywhere. And part of the reason for that is because the farming community, the ranching community, has representation at the legislature to make sure that silly ideas like that don't go anywhere. So we're going to continue to do that. But we have seen, again, proposals, just like what I mentioned, that big, huge book that the Kirkpatrick Foundation sent, that suggests legislative action for all those types of silly ideas that I mentioned a minute ago. So it's very real today, but we're more concerned about what could happen to our grandkids 30, 40, 50 years down the road.
Now, one of the criticisms of the Right to Farm bill is the fact that a lot of the terminology is pretty vague. It doesn't really describe what a compelling state interest is, and really, if it's not described and defined, you leave it to the judiciary to define. Why are some of the terms in 777 really not explained and not defined?
When we went through to work on this bill, and Representative Scott Biggs is the author. He's from Chickasha. He's the author of the bill and did a fantastic job, in our opinion, of choosing some language. You know, we're putting it in the Constitution, so how prescriptive do you want to be? Do you want to go in and outline each individual practice, or do you want to use terms that are legal and such as compelling state interest? Compelling state interest is a very high degree, but, you know, food production should be that important. We should protect food production. God forbid if this country ever becomes reliant upon food importation in order to feed us. That's one of the worst things that can happen. So we believe it excels to that level of compelling state interest. Compelling state interest in the past has been defined by the courts and will continue to be defined by the courts, as you mentioned, but it's the health, safety, and the well-being of the citizens of Oklahoma. So, for instance, an issue like water, is water quality and quantity a compelling state interest? I have yet to talk to anyone who would say that it is not. It is certainly a compelling state interest, and therefore the legislature should and will have the authority to define laws around water. Those are things that rise to the health and the safety and the well-being of the citizens of Oklahoma. this bill, by using that language, makes sure that some of these onerous regulations that are put on by special ideas and agendas of special interest groups, they just won't see the light of day.
But of course, to define water as a compelling state interest, that will have to go through the court system, will it not? Yes, the legislature did pass a law saying that water was a compelling state interest, but it happened after 2014, which the change would negate. It says any law passed after 2014 is not. It has to go through this process of if state question 777 is enacted.
Well, it says that the compelling state interest and then the 2014 as it applies to agriculture. So what we have to ask ourselves is this question. Is water in general, whether it's agriculture, municipal, whatever the use of water is that a compelling state interest? I think the answer to that is yes. And so right to farm will not come back, even though HB 2446, which defines water as a compelling state interest, was passed in the 2016 legislative session. Right to farm will not affect that. It won't say that water is not a compelling interest. In fact, what we believe it does is it establishes a precedent that the legislature came in and is telling the courts, we believe that water is a compelling state interest, and we want you to act in that manner. And I think even if you look at federal designation of water, even international designation of water, the importance of water, the court would easily see that water is a compelling state interest and would uphold that if anything like that should ever come to the courts.
Last question, and this gets to the heart of why there is a need for state question 777. This puts in our Constitution special protections for a class of employment, of ranching and farming class, of the people that do this. It puts special protections into the Constitution. Why is that necessary, given other industries that are important to the state of Oklahoma, such as energy or aerospace or the like? Why does there need to be special protections for farming and ranching?
That's a great question. I really appreciate you asking it. And it's a very appropriate question. I look at it this way. My daughter, who's 13, has a cell phone, and she just received it. That's kind of the rule in our house. And she just can't understand how she could go a day without that cell phone, when the reality is she could. She could live without that cell phone. We could live without electricity. We might not like it, but we could do it. We could even live without gasoline. Again, we wouldn't like it, and it would be a big adjustment in our life, but we could live without it. We can't live without food. We cannot function. We can't live without food. So we believe food production, the production of food, rises to that important level of let's make sure that we protect it so that we have an abundance of food, so that we have a variety of food, so that consumers can make purchasing decisions based upon their personal beliefs, based upon their paycheck. Whatever their opinion is what they will be able to do, and we think it needs to be enshrined in the Constitution in order to protect consumers, because food production is just that important. God forbid that we ever become a country that's dependent on other countries to feed us, because, boy, that'll be a bad, bad day.
All right. Michael Kelsey, thanks so much for your time.
You bet. Thank you.
Michael Kelsey is the Executive Vice President of the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association, one of the proponents of State Question 777, known as the Oklahoma Right to Farm Amendment, which will be on the November ballot. To learn more about pros and cons, you can visit OklahomaRightToFarm.com or vote no on 777.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.